Hello and welcome to What Scream, the horror movie podcast, where I, your host, Green, chats with a guest every week about horror films, and we chat about two films that have to do with a particular subject that I have previously randomly chosen. So this week, my subject is German horror. I have previously done an episode on German expressionism in horror, in which I covered Nosferatu and The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. But this time it's just general, straightforward as you can get, German horror. My guest this week is Becky Dark, and together we are talking about 2017's Hagazusa, A Heathen's Curse, as well as the infamous Necromantic from 1987. Be warned, there is obviously chat about necrophilia. If we're talking about Necromantic, it gets squishy. But look, you wouldn't be here if you didn't know what we were going to be talking about. It is me, after all. So yes, enjoy this chat about German horror films.
So I would like to welcome to What a Scream, Becky Dark. How are you?
Hi, lovely. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. We had a bit of a mad storm this morning and nobody could leave their house, but But we have recovered. We're here. We're still here.
Oh, thank goodness you weren't blown away.
I know. Ended up in the land of Oz. So for anyone that doesn't know, would you like to introduce yourself and let listeners know what you do?
Yeah, of course. So I'm Becky Dark and I'm a horror podcaster and writer. I do wider film stuff from time to time, but my kind of bread and butter is horror. I've sort of joined the niche that is our little weird sort of horror crew. So I do a lot of podcasting. I've got a couple of my own podcasts, which are kind of intermittent. Don't Point That Horror at Me, where my best friend Jill and I look at the old 90s, like paperback kind of teen and YA horror books that we were both obsessed with when we were at school. And they're these sort of epic deep dives into these silly little books. So they do tend to be very sort of few and far between when we actually get around to reading them and recording these sort of huge 4-hour long conversations. But we have got another one coming out for Christmas. Okay. So that's exciting. And me and Josh Tonks also hosted a podcast called Return to Eerie Indiana, which was a rewatch podcast about the 90s kids show Eerie Indiana. So a lot of my stuff does get sort of grounded in nostalgia in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And when I'm not doing that, I'm guesting on other people's, just like yours.
Yay. I think I missed out on the point horror thing. I went from like goosebumps. Not reading. Yeah, to just not reading at all. Oh. And then I loved Eerie Indiana though.
Amazing.
Yeah, that and Are You Afraid of the Dark was like,
oh my God, so good. All of that sort of, again, that sort of tweeny, like weird, spooky, creepy, bizarre goings on stuff. Like I was so into all of that. Yeah. So it's been really fun. I mean, we haven't recorded for a little while because the thing about Eerie Indiana is it was only 19 episodes long. So it was sort of a bit of a flash in the pan, but it's one of those shows that has had such a like cult following. So we actually did a live show up in Birmingham last week. Josh and I reunited and that was amazing. Like we showed an episode of the show to a live audience and had a chat about it afterwards. And again, like everybody's just like, oh my God, we love this show so much. And it's so fun to kind of revisit it.
So how did you get into horror and what was the first horror film you remember watching?
God, like a lot of people who are now obsessed with horror, I got into it pretty young. So I started watching, I mean, you know, we've already sort of talked about like sort of creepy kids shows. And I think I was always sort of drawn to that like darker side mm-hmm. of pop culture. And so when I first started discovering horror movies, I was just immediately kind of rapt by them. I really loved the kind of the adrenaline, I guess, and the, you know, that you get from the fear and the sort of thrill of watching these films. And I think I realized pretty early on that this was going to be a genre for me. And so I probably started watching them. I was probably like 9 or 10.
Oh, wow.
And my my household was always like a real sort of film household. And my mum, for example, was really into like sci-fi and action and stuff. And so I think probably the first film that can be classed as a horror that I watched was probably Jaws. That was because I think in our household, that was just kind of seen as like, you know, a creature feature or an action film or a sort of adventure film more than it was classed like a horror film. Yeah. And it's funny, I'm on record as saying to this day that Jaws isn't a horror film, because I think like when I first watched it, like to me it wasn't, even though it's, you know, got this huge toothy shark who's tearing people to bits. I just never like viewed it like that. But looking back, that was probably the first one that gave me that real kind of like thrill, and that sort of like I've just became an adrenaline junkie for all things scary on screen.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same opinion that to me, Jaws isn't a horror film per se. I think, but you know what? I think I know loads of people who are like, Jaws was the first horror film they ever saw, and they're petrified now of the water. Like they do not go into the ocean. And I think I saw it when I was a bit too old. And like, I'm a massive water baby. Like I love water. I love jumping into bodies of water, which will probably end up killing me. You know, when you talk about like, how do you die in a horror film? I'm like, cause I'm the one that jumps into the water. So yeah, I've never really viewed it as a horror film, but yeah, I can definitely see why people see it as a horror film.
Yeah, I can as well. And I've sort of had to temper my reaction to it a little bit, because I get flack from people for saying that it isn't.
Well, at least now we can be united.
Yes. Thank goodness.
Yeah. So our theme for this episode is German horror. What was your reaction to me coming to you with this subject? Is German horror really on your radar?
I was a little bit thrown when you suggested German horror, because I couldn't like immediately bring loads to mind. I could think of all sorts of other European horrors, and German just didn't seem to jump out at me. And then when I started looking them up, all of the ones that I thought were German turned out to be like Austrian or something like that, and actually weren't German at all. So when I sort of, when we were putting a list together and I came to you with some suggestions, it was quite a short list. There was like, you get the like really old black and white like Vampire, which I haven't seen. And there's a couple of others like Luz, and but really it isn't a country that I have necessarily gravitated towards. And then when you actually look it up, I don't know that they've got a huge pedigree of horror. It seems that other European countries seem to have sort of spearheaded European horror more than Germany has, is what I found. But, you know, I might be wrong, and maybe I just didn't sort of come across any of the sort of big classics that are sort of, you know, these gaping holes in my knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, I did a dissertation on German expressionistic horror, so, you know, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Yeah, because you said to me when you came to me with it, you were like, we can't do the big ones.
Yeah, you can't do the easy ones. Okay. Yeah. And then like, I know Necromantic, which is one of the ones we're going to be talking about. But like you, I was like, this is a real blind spot for me. Mm. And even when I was looking up German horror films, a lot of them are like co-productions with Austria, or what you think is German isn't Possession, isn't that set in Germany, but it's actually Belgian or something like that.
It's set in Berlin. And so I got excited about that, and then when I looked it up, I was like, oh no, it actually doesn't count.
So you know, we know all about like French horror cinema, Spanish horror cinema, obviously British, Irish. But I'm wondering, like, why is there such a blank spot with German? Is it because perhaps they do not want to explore their past or their, like, what's going on socially in Germany? I'm wondering if they've still kind of like not quite decided to come to terms with that yet, and that's why horror hasn't been explored. Maybe I'm completely wrong. But
yeah, I wondered if it might be something like that, like maybe just kind of pop culturally, it's, you know, they've had a lot of darkness in their past, and so you know, they've decided not to explore it so much in cinema. But I mean, I don't know, like, you know, if you look at Italy, for example, they've got a huge horror pedigree, and you know, they've had as much kind of darkness in their history as loads of other countries, as have, you know, so many places that kind of do delve into horror as, you know, a real kind of focus for their genre, for their genre of cinema. So yeah, I don't know. I was kind of thinking about it as well, and I haven't got any answers, but maybe it's a gap that needs to be filled with sort of German filmmakers like coming up. You know, maybe we'll see sort of a rash of them as I don't know, yes, they sort of, they, I guess, like, deem it as kind of a kind of subject matter, I guess, that they want to start exploring more. But yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, if there is, you know, like an underground horror German scene, I'd love to be let known.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start with our first film then. Would you like to introduce it and give us a brief synopsis, please?
Yeah, definitely. So we're going to talk about Hagazusa from 2017. And it's a period piece set in kind of the German mountains. And there is a sort of young woman who is like a goat herd who lives in this very isolated cabin. And when we first meet her, she's a young girl and she lives with her mum. And then we kind of, after her mum passes away, we jump forward in time to her when she's an adult. And it's a very kind of slow burn, quiet, you know, not very sort of plot heavy movie. It is, it sort of looks at loneliness and isolation and what that can do to the human psyche. So like synopsis wise, it's just sort of following her quite quiet and isolated life, and the darkness that sort of comes from living on her own, and some sort of encounters that she has with local people who sort of don't look at her very favorably. And they have, her and her mum have been sort of called witches, and I think there's quite a lot of suspicion about the lives that they lead, sort of away from the rest of this little community. So yeah, that's sort of it, really. We just sort of follow her with her goats, and as things sort of progress, this sort of darkness overtakes the film and her existence. And by the end of it, she sort of goes off the deep end, and, you know, ends up sort of, she kills her baby and burns down her own house.
As she do. What did you think of Hagazusa when you first saw it?
When I first saw it, like, so I've watched it twice now. I watched it when it first came out, and I watched it again for recording today. And my experience of it, like, I really like it. I think it is a beautifully crafted film. As I say, it's very slow burn, it's not very plot heavy, and it's just like a real kind of vibe. It's very atmospheric. The cinematography is beautiful. It's sort of crystal clear, really sharp, and it's just this sort of exploration, as I say, of sort of loneliness and grief. And I mean, I think it's a really, like, real sort of quality piece of cinema, that I can't say I like enjoy watching because it's really bleak and very, very dark. But I think that it's quite an accomplishment, actually. I'm a fan.
So this is like very much like an accompaniment almost to Robert Eggers' The Witch. It's always had that kind of comparison. But I found The Witch quite slow paced, and I have the worst attention span in the world. Like, literally spider monkey on acid. That is my attention span. And so I found The Witch hard going, and then watching this, I was like, oh.
Even slower.
Oh my God. Like, I had to really concentrate. But I found it almost more atmospheric than The Witch. I know Witch, there's more of that, like, there's something in the woods, something's going to get us. But in this, it was more like there's something in her mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I guess being someone who is a mum and has felt isolated because of being a mother, I was like, I got it. And so just that dread, I felt like it did a really good job of building that dread from within.
Yeah, agreed. And like the score is just very, again, not too dissimilar to The Witch, but just this sort of constant like drone in the background, this sort of very low I don't even know what the instrument is that they use. I wonder if it's some sort of like traditional instrument, because it's such a like otherworldly noise.
Yeah.
And you talk about them sort of building dread right from the outset of the film. And for me, like the score and the sound design in it, it goes such a long way for that. There isn't a lot of dialogue in the film at all, obviously, because a lot of the time, you know, she's on her own. And so you only really get snatches of dialogue when she has these brief encounters with other members of the community. And so what you get for the sound for a lot of the film is sort of natural sound of kind of the mountains and her daily life. And then, yeah, like I say, just this sort of droning noise in the background, which just absolutely sort of sets my teeth on edge. Like the dread that it induces is amazing.
Yeah. I love the drone noise as well. Apparently it's done by a dark ambient band from Greece. Whatever dark ambience is, cool. I don't know. I have no clue what that is, but cool. I really like the way they've set up her isolation, and she's so starved of human interaction and human touch that she even attempts to find affection and comfort in milking the goats, which, like, if you look at it from the outgo, you're like, that's a bizarre scene. But at the same time, you're like, she's been isolated since she was a little girl, you know, and she's on her own bringing up this child, and the village is so horrible to her.
So horrible. Yeah. Like, in fact, you get this almost an increased sense of her isolation once she starts interacting with the other people sort of in the village, because at first, you know, she's sort of living this this life on her own, but it could almost be like a sort of self-imposed isolation or, you know, sort of you could almost see it as like a happy little life that she leads. Mm. But actually, once she starts interacting with like the boys who are throwing the stones at her, and then, you know, the other woman, the sort of young woman who at first seems like such a breath of fresh air and seems like really kind and kind of interested, you know, actually ends up being like horribly, like sort of complicit in violence and like sexual violence against her. And so once it's almost sort of ironic that once she starts interacting with these other characters, her isolation seems to increase. And I can understand as the film goes on, like why, as you say, so much of the threat is kind of from within her, like why that kind of increasing dread and the sort of paranoia around the people around her sort of starts to push her off the deep end.
Yeah, and it has this really interesting examination of something that we see in horror a lot, is that you know, they, all the villagers and, you know, the local priest, whatever it is, they're all like, you know, you're a witch, you've committed sacrilege, you're a pariah, whatever. But it turns out that they're the actual monsters. And they're like terrible people.
Yeah.
And, you know, she should, I mean, there's like the scene where that kind of made me not laugh, but kind of like priests. so she gets called to go to see the priest, and he says, we need to be cleansed of sacrilege. And he gives back her mother's skull.
Mm.
And he's like, can't have that here, you know, witches.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas he's surrounded by an ossuary, which is like pure paganism, pure yeah. witchcraft. Like, and it's just, it's so like, you know, pot calling the kettle black, really. And I found that a really interesting look at how, you know, if you say I'm a monster, then I will be a monster. Mm. And I felt like it could almost be a prequel to The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Interesting.
Yeah, because yeah. you know, in that, it's like they burned this girl alive. She wasn't a witch, but because they made her out to be a witch, she then became a witch.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, like, I was like, oh, maybe we've got a bit of a prequel going on here.
Yeah, definitely. I can totally see that. I love that. And also, obviously, in The Witch, you know, she's a product of her own environment.
Yeah.
And, you know, that irony of the witch is actually in the woods, but they make her, you know, sort of by sort of isolating her from the family and, you know, pushing her to this violence. You know, it's actually that sort of turns her into the witch by the end. Spoilers. So I think there's such, as you said, that they're a real sort of amazing companion piece.
Mm. The horror kind of amps up towards the end, doesn't it? Perhaps the last 15 minutes. And perhaps one of the most harrowing scenes is, like you've mentioned before, she kills her baby, but she doesn't realize it, which made me think of kind of like, you know, postnatal psychosis and yeah. depression.
Yeah.
And how even back then that was seen as like witchcraft or, you know, that kind of way. And it, like, yeah, it's those last 15 minutes. And especially like, again, spoilers, but we do spoilers on this. And she puts the baby's body in a soup.
Oh.
And then eats it.
Oh.
And yeah, it's like, so it's so funny because we've got like this, what, hour and a half of just not a lot happening, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then these last 15 minutes, you're like, oh, holy shit. What did you think of the conclusion and that kind of last sequence?
It's so full on. And it kind of feels like the natural conclusion to this impending doom that has just hung over the whole film. And she takes some mushrooms, doesn't she? She finds some mushrooms in the woods. And so it's this kind of sort of psychedelic, like bad trip that she seems to have.
Mm-hmm.
And at first it looks like she might be sort of communing more with nature. And actually it pushes her to sort of stride into this pond with her baby around, sort of in a, like a sort of papoose around her. And then as she comes out of this bad trip and she finds the baby's body in the hut, like, this is a film that's a lot about kind of, like, would you call this a folk horror? I think I'd call it a folk horror in terms of the sort of the relationship that it has with nature. There's a lot of like snakes and maggots and sort of, you know, trees and things like that. Like, what do you think about it genre wise?
Yeah, I would have gone with folk horror also, I think, just because of this kind of rural inhabitant versus the town folk inhabitants, that kind of like, at least that version, and then kind of everything being of the earth.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah, I would have gone with folk horror also.
Yeah, and it almost feels like she's sort of she's almost like returning, like she after the sexual assault, she sort of bathes herself, and it feels almost like a rebirth. This film is cut up into chapters, and that is the end of one of the chapters when she sort of bathes herself, and she looks very defiant as she sort of sits in front of the shrine that she's made out of her mother's skull, and it's sort of after that that she eats the mushroom, goes into the water, which obviously has the unfortunate sort of effect of her baby dying. And then when she cooks the baby and eats it, and then like the, you know, the absolute conclusion of the film is her sort of homestead like burning to the ground. Like it feels like she's kind of almost like returning to the earth.
Yeah, definitely. I really kind of I liked it for its like it's the final conclusion. You know, she lays on the mountain and then she goes up in flames. It just felt really like okay, so it opens with her mother and herself, and her mother gets sick and starts acting strangely. It's obviously affected her mind, and then she becomes a mother, and it's all about almost like cyclical, and you know, is she gonna inherit this trauma and this psychosis from her mother, and then she ends the life of her child, and it's almost like, and then she burns, and it's almost like this end of that inherited trauma.
Yeah.
Especially like when you look at mothers and daughters, and how a lot of the time mothers can inflict trauma on their daughters because they see themselves as a reflection of themselves. And so I really liked that end, you know, we're going to end that cycle, we're going to end that trauma in a really horrible way, in a very traumatic way. But yeah, I really liked that reading of this film.
I love that actually. And it does feel like a film that's absolutely dripping with trauma, kind of, that is imposed upon people from the outside, but also that comes kind of within a family and within themselves. So yeah, I mean, sort of ending that cycle in such a grim and this sort of inferno of it at the end, where it just feels like it's all sort of come to such a head that it kind of can't go anywhere but up in flames. I think that makes a lot of sense. I love that.
Yeah. So would you recommend Hagasusa to horror films?
I would. Yeah.
To horror fans. Sorry. So would you recommend it to horror films?
All of the other horror films should watch this horror film. I would recommend it to fans. I think there's going to be a subsection of horror fans who really love like the frenetic, high energy, schlocky stuff that would struggle with Hagasusa. I think it is very much a vibe and an atmosphere. And it's also like, it's really dark and really bleak. And so if you want something kind of fun on a Saturday night to watch with your friends over a pizza, this is not the film for you. But if it's like, you know, a sort of cold afternoon that you've got on your own, you've got a couple of hours where you just want to sort of immerse yourself in an atmosphere of a film, and you know, you are kind of craving something a bit arty, a bit sort of European, and something that is such a sort of look at sort of the quieter side of the genre, but how kind of dark that can go, then I think it's a really good film.
Yeah, I'd be of the same opinion. Like if you're looking, you know, sometimes you want to put on a film, you don't want to think about it. You're just like, I'm just going to put it on. And when I turn it off, that's it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're looking for something to get meaning from, and, you know, for it to stay with you for a little bit afterwards, and if you like that kind of slow burn, then yeah, I definitely go with this 100%. And then watch Autopsy of Jane Doe afterwards.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, perfect double bill. Yeah. I'm actually thinking I might watch, because I watched Hagasusa today, so I might watch Autopsy of Jane Doe tonight, because that is a banger.
Yes, I love that film. Love that film. Okay, let's move on to our next one, which is a doozy of a film.
Whoa.
I freaking love this film. If you can say that you love it. So we also decided to do Necromantic, which is a 1987 West German, obviously before the fall of the Berlin Wall, a German horror film directed by Jörg Butkereit. this film is it's become a bit of a cult film. It involves a man who works for a cleanup company who cleans up, you know, crime scenes, accidents, all that kind of stuff, and he brings back a fresh cadaver for himself and his girlfriend to enjoy. after getting sacked from his job, his girlfriend leaves him, taking their friend with her, and he falls into a real pit of despair. What do you think of Necromantic?
Oh, a grain. So this is the first time I'd seen it, and no. I know. It's such a notorious film.
Oh my God.
So my expectations were sort of off the charts, really. Like, not in terms of like whether, like, expecting it to be good or expecting it to be bad, but like I expected it to kind of really shock me.
Okay.
You know, it's definitely a film that's got a reputation as being like quite full on, and, you know, on the sort of more extreme end of the sort of like body horror side of things. I struggled with it. Like,
no, really?
Yeah, I thought it was horrible. Which it's meant to be, so that's fine. So, like, It's done a job. I don't think that it sort of did anything that it shouldn't have done. Like, it's meant to be a horrible film.
Yeah.
And for me, it really was. Like, it is ugly and scuzzy and... yeah, it's like 71 minutes of just utter sort of gross depravity and like the most sort of just sort of ugly sides of humanity, I think. And yeah, I didn't love it. I did struggle a little bit.
Oh, this is funny. So my first experience with Necromantic, I was in college, and the guy I was seeing, he was in college, I was at home, and he had this hard drive, and he was like, there's loads of films on that hard drive, go check them out, you know, I'm not even sure what's on there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Necromantic, and I was like, what's that about? Put it on, and I was like, oh okay.
That's
fair enough. And since then, I really like, I think I've seen it about 5 times.
Oh my
and
God,
I,
really?
Yeah. I really like Necromantic. And you know what it is, right? This sounds totally bizarre. I have this morbid fascination with stuff like cannibalism and necrophilia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's so weird because it's such a taboo.
Yeah.
But I'm strangely, morbidly, like, interested in it.
Totally get that, yes.
Yeah. And so this, I find... because it's weird. It's not like this is horror. It's almost like a love story. Like, the music's really floaty.
Yes.
And like, you know.
The visuals when they're having sex with it are all sort of like dreamy and blurry.
And so I think it's a really interesting, like totally art house look at something like necrophilia. Mm-hmm. But it is disgusting. Like, when he pulls the body out of the bag and it's all sticky and sinewy, and it's like
and they're like it was the bits like when they were like sucking on its eyeball and stuff. I was like, literally, I watched this at like 10 a.m this morning. I should have maybe I'm not sure it's how I should have started my Monday, let's put it that way. It was like, obviously I was kind of prepared for it to be really shocking, but I wasn't prepared for like how icky it was, because I'm really fascinated with stuff like cannibalism and necrophilia as well, and I don't, you know, I think, as you say, like, there's such taboos, but I think there is such a morbid fascination with those sorts of subjects. And I'd heard that it was a sort of, you know, like a love story with a dead body. And I think I maybe even, I sort of wanted more of that. I wanted more of an exploration of the kind of maybe the emotional attraction to something like necrophilia. Whereas this, it was so much about like the kind of the bodily, like fluids and eyes, and you know, they've got jars of all of these body parts, and it seems like their relationship has kind of been like escalating to this point, right? So he brings home like an eye and a heart, and they've got these sort of shelves covered in all of these bits and pieces, and then he sort of comes home with what appears to be kind of like the ultimate treasure for this couple that they can then like enjoy together. And actually in some ways, I would have preferred to have seen more about that. It almost, the sort of necrophilia stuff, this is going to sound really weird, but almost there wasn't like enough of that. There wasn't enough of an exploration of that. And it kind of degenerated too quickly into him like hurting cats and you know, like killing sex workers and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I do get you. I mean, it has that really weird scene where they saw off the leg of the chair, and that's
and put a condom on it. Like, what are you expecting to happen?
What's going to stop you from contracting anything? You've literally been sucking the eyeball of a dead person.
I know, right?
So there's one scene in the film that I find really interesting, and I guess it relates a lot to us horror fans as well, is that the main character, his girlfriend's left him, and he's like, I've got to get me kicks from somewhere. I'm going to go to this horror film. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're made to think, right, he's, you know, a gross, awful person or whatever, because he gets off with actual dead bodies. And he goes to this film, and it's a horror film. A woman is getting chased by a killer. She's getting like sexually assaulted by a killer. And the audience in the cinema are getting turned on by it.
Yeah.
And like laughing at it. Whereas our main character is disgusted by that, and he leaves.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, do you think that's a commentary on people that are, not so much necrophiliacs, but people in general that are into like the darker side of things are always like, oh, they're, you know, they're dark, terrible people. But then there's others who are real like voyeurs when it comes to other things, like, you know, do you think that was a bit of a commentary on that?
I think so. I think what you say about voyeurism, it's definitely a kind of, it's almost turning the mirror around, like on the audience. Like he, you know, you're sort of watching this and maybe judging him for his like his lifestyle choices, but look at what you're watching this, these people in this cinema sort of munching popcorn and getting off with each other while this woman's being you know, harassed and stabbed and sexually assaulted. I think it's definitely kind of an interesting comment and sort of exploration of you know, what some people see as acceptable and what some people see as like a line they won't cross. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, what's your line? Like, where do you draw the line? You're quite comfortable watching this, but, you know, don't judge somebody who kind of behaves in these manners and stuff like that.
Yeah. I guess like even when you look at perhaps the two ends of the scale of horror, where you've got like extreme horror fans that will watch like the most depraved shit, like me being one of them, and then, you know, people are like, oh my god, how can you watch that, that's terrible, and you're like, well, you also watch, you know, women being hunted and stalked and, exactly, and killed, you know. It's just as bad in some cases. So apparently the filmmakers came up with this film because they wanted to explore the proximity of sex and death. How do you think that message is well explored in Necromantic, or do you think it gets a bit lost with like the gross out aspect of it?
I think I think the sort of crossover between sex and death is well explored in it. I think that it looks at how death can be an attractive prospect, especially with the sort of conclusion of the film where he kills himself. You know, he stabs himself, and then you get that, like, he's got, you know, this huge erection, and he's like ejaculating, and then he's ejaculating blood. And the whole film sort of looks at, you know, the attraction to death, whether that be as even like, you know, working in it as an industry, like these people have their jobs because people die. And the kind of main couple at the center of the story have obviously found each other through a kind of mutual interest and mutual attraction to death. And so I think in terms of kind of sex and death and the attraction to it, I think it does a good job. I think what I wanted, especially with it being called necromantic, I kind of wanted a bit more of the almost like the emotion behind it. And I didn't get a lot of emotion. And I think that's kind of what it had been sold to me on. So I think kind of in terms of like the sex and attraction to death, yes, but I would have liked a bit more of the kind of the necromantic bit.
Yeah, I agree. I almost got the vibe that he was doing it solely to like keep his girlfriend to a certain point, like he, you know, it was more like the romance with him, and I didn't feel like there was romance between him apart from like the actual sex scene. I didn't feel like there was like much romance between him and the corpse, whereas she felt a lot more kind of like the fact that she took the corpse with her.
Yeah. And when they're like when she's like laying in bed with it, like reading its stories.
I mean, yeah, so I think I would have liked to explored his relation with the corpse a bit more, because we get a bit of an insight. Like, so the rabbit, there's a whole, like, it's terrible. I have a pet rabbit, and that's the only scene that I'm like, ugh! Where it's almost like he's experienced this killing of a rabbit as a child, and that has somehow formulated itself into this obsession for him. But yeah, I would have, like yourself, I definitely would have liked to have seen more of like a psychological exploration and emotional exploration. Because like I said, I'm fascinated with this stuff, and I want to know like, what is the emotional attraction? I have a psychologist friend. I think I might text her after this and be like, hey, need your opinion on something.
Just a casual Monday afternoon text about nothing in particular, you know.
Exactly. So yeah, that would be my only thing. The other thing I think that the film explores quite well is people's reactions to death, especially when we see it in like a professional manner. You know, they're quite flippant. They're like, oh, it's another body, just, you know, brush it up and throw it in the back and we're all good. Yeah. Whereas like it seems that him and his girlfriend really like, in their own sick, sad way, like honor the death and honor the dead. So that was kind of interesting to see those two kind of parallels.
Yeah, definitely. It's I laughed at one bit quite near the beginning where the crew have kind of gone out to, so it's after the car crash, and they go out to scoop up the bodies from the car crash. And they're just like literally like scooping this woman's like insides up and like throwing them into bin bags. And the main guy, the boss, says something like, where are those body bags? And you kind of expect them to like come over with like body bags that you see on, you know, sort of TV and in movies, but they don't. It's literally just like bin bags. And yeah, I mean, you're right. There is definitely a contrast between the way that the people who kind of earn their money off of this stuff treat these dead bodies and these people who were, you know, alive like minutes before, and how the couple, they do almost sort of like romanticize death. So yeah, I think that's an interesting contrast there as well, definitely.
Would you recommend, this is, I'm going to assume you're not going to, but would you recommend Necromantic to people?
I'm not going to say I'm not going to recommend it. I think, like, I'm glad I watched it. Okay, because, like, good. I say, it had been on my radar for such a long time. And it has got such a reputation. And I'm glad that I can now say I have seen Necromantic and I've sort of made my own judgment call on it. I think it's quite... Like you alluded to the animal cruelty thing, and I do think that that is something that people need to be aware of. If you can maybe get hold of a cut where it doesn't have rabbits being killed on screen, then maybe go for that. Because that I found really like quite gratuitous and unnecessary. Mm. And I thought there was quite a lot about this film that was gratuitous, but that felt like unnecessary.
Yeah.
I think it's a film that sits at a real, really sort of interesting point on the horror spectrum. And yeah, like I say, I'm glad that I've finally watched it, but maybe don't watch it at 10 a.m. on a Monday morning.
Just imagine you sitting there with like a bowl of porridge, like...
I know. Like, just spoon like up to my mouth, just like, no.
So I take it you won't be seeking out Necromantic 2.
Well, I don't know. Should I?
I mean...
Is it more of the same?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Okay, then maybe no.
I mean, I will always recommend a film to ruin your day. Like, I am that annoying person that's like, let me recommend a film for you. And people are like, what is wrong with you? but then again, like, I just think... So a couple of weeks ago, I was at a kid's party and sat around with all the mums. The mums are like, what do you do? And I'm like, okay, all right, I better tell them. And I'm like, well, you know, horror films, basically. They're like, oh, recommend me a film. But I'm like, what's the least offensive film I can recommend? So I wouldn't be recommending this amongst my son's friend's parents.
No.
But I would recommend it to people that I think could handle it.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and won't avoid me for the rest of their lives after seeing it. So out of the two films, which one, if you had to pick, would you kind of go with or recommend over the other?
So I would go with Hagazusa. Okay. I think it's more of a sort of interesting meditation on the kind of dark side of humanity without the animal cruelty and eyeballs, but still with like a really sort of healthy, beautifully produced. So if I had to pick one of the two, it would be that.
Okay, mine would be Necromantic, just
because it's a fave.
Because it's a fave, it is a fave. And I think Zoe Rose Smith or Zobo would kill me if I didn't say that.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, I'm sorry, Zoe. When I saw her a couple of weeks ago, I was like, I'm finally watching Necromantic because I'm going on a Scream. And she was like, oh my God, how exciting. I was like, yeah, I know, I'm really excited. And now I'm like really worried that she's going to hate me for not liking it.
So thank you so much for coming on and chatting about German horror films with me.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Before we go, I always ask, what is your favorite horror film?
My favorite horror film is 1976's The Omen.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. That's a first time.
Really?
But yeah, it's the first time I've ever heard anybody say that. How comes?
Oh my God. I just think it's flawless. It's... Mm. I like occult horror is one of my favorites anyway. Okay. I love anything to do with like demons and the devil and stuff like same. That. And it just it does everything that I love a horror film to do. It sort of scares me. It's got really cool kills. It's got a brilliant cast. You know, Gregory Peck and Lee Remick and David Warner are just so amazing in it. It's got a really solid plot and a story that sort of sweeps you along with it. It's quite camp. And it's I watch it like every, I watch it every Halloween. So it's my go-to Halloween watch. So I've watched it so, so many times and it just, it feels timeless to me. Mm. It's got like the ultimate original creepy kid. Mm. And I just don't think it ever gets old. I just watch it and watch it and watch it. And I enjoy it more and more. I think every time I do, I love it.
Yeah, that the it's the end shot for me when Damien just turns around like that. That's seared into my brain. And when I learned I was having a little boy when I was pregnant, I was like, oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, he's the creepy kid to stop people having kids for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. thank you so much. So where can people find you on social media? If you would like to give that
on
information
social media,
out.
Yeah. Yeah. You can find me at Bunny Dark. So BUNNYDARKE on Twitter. Yeah. And you can find my writing on Games Radar. I do their horror updates every couple of weeks. And I'm always hanging around Evolution of Horror if anybody listens to that podcast.
So that was my chat there with Becky Dark about German horror. And we talked about Hagazusa from 2017, as well as Necromantic from 1987. What do you think about German horror? Are you probably more of an expert than we are? It seems to be another blind spot for me. So if anyone is more of an expert on German horror, please get into contact. I would love to hear your point of view on this country's horror. Let me know what you think of this week's episode on Instagram, at What A Scream, on Twitter, at @_scream. I'm also on TikTok, at What A Scream Podcast. And don't forget to rate, review, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. Next week, my special guest is Mike Munzer from the Evolution of Horror. And together we are going to be talking about David Lynch and two of his films. I feel like I am covering the Davids at the minute, you know. Last week it was David Cronenberg. Next week it's David Lynch. I have also recently watched Zodiac as well for a special Patreon episode for Moving Pictures Film Club, and I watched Zodiac because me and Tim are discussing the real life case of the Zodiac Killer. So I feel like I've had a lot of the Davids in my life recently. Whether that's a good thing or not, who knows? So yes, make sure you tune in next week to listen to myself and Mike chat about two Lynch films. And don't forget to stay horrific. Goodbye.